Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
State Treasurer David McRae is returning record amounts of money to Mississippians, whether it's through the College and Career Savings Program or the millions in unclaimed money awaiting your claim. Treasurer David McRae says get your application and claims today. Treasury.ms.gov.
I'm Steve Azar, and I'm on the other side of the microphone, meaning I'm asking the questions this time, and oh, have mercy for the airwaves. I spent 20 years in Music City, wrote and made some hits, traveled the world, and then moved my family back to the birthplace of American music and where the magnolia trees prosper. And now every time I put my feet on Mississippi soil, when I'm off the road, well, I'm at peace. On this show, it's all about hearing the story straight from the mouths of the friends I've made along the way, their journey to success. Heck, there might be someone on, I don't even know, but you know how us Mississippi types are. We tend to take well to new company. In a Mississippi Minute, all 60 of them. I'm Steve Azar.
It's just like that muddy river, moving slow. Ain't no worries, it's how life goes, baby. In a Mississippi Minute. That's right.
Today on In a Mississippi Minute, through his talents, reconfirms why Mississippi is art. He's known by critics and fans alike as one of the greatest piano players around the globe, and he's truly our very own. From Mississippi to Carnegie Hall, in his world, that says it all. Excited about having pianist, author, colorist, and my pal on the show today, Bruce Levingston. Hey, Bruce, what's up?
Hey, Steve. Great to talk to you.
Are you in parts of Oxford, Mississippi right now?
I'm in Oxford now. Yes. And are you in Greenville?
I am. So we're not, 2 hours, 20 minutes. I've got the road to you in my head right now. I got sort of the back of my hand. I know that drive. So that's good. And that's, I appreciate right. You taking
well, you
the
know,
time.
I was born in Greenville, so.
I know this. We're going to talk about all that. I want to dig into that right now. So, Bruce, it's amazing. I started thinking about the time you put in to be as great as you are. I think about great musicians. I've played with so many. And I always wanted to write songs. And I got good enough on guitar. And then as I got older, I got a little better. But nothing like some of the guys that I've played with. And you're one of those guys that that just spent all this time doing that. And like, obviously writing and performing and all that. But just the ability to become a great pianist or anything, any instrument that, you know, that someone spends time on. Take me back to you as a kid. I've got to understand the time you put in and when did it start?
You know, when I was a little boy, I was hearing so much music in the Delta. It's just a place where everywhere you went, there was something going on. And it wasn't just one kind. There was, some rock going on then, and we'd have Broadway out at Delta State, and I was going to churches and playing for all the different churches in town with different things. So beautiful hymns and spirituals, and then we also in my own house, both my parents loved music. They weren't professionals, but my dad had this amazing record collection, jazz and classical, and he was playing this all the time for us as kids. And my mom played the piano, and my brother, who's is a wonderful painter, but also could play the guitar and the piano, was playing music and also playing records. I remember, in the '60s, hearing everybody, that. Hear the Beatles and Rolling Stones and Simon and Garfunkel, and it was just great. It's kind of like this fantastic array of sound that was coming in. So that was just a part of my existence. I never knew life without it. And so when I was three, I think I was already, I had this tiny little kid's record player, and the record itself was little, and I'd play over and over Victor Herbert's Babes in Toyland, which just I loved, something I could put on myself. And then pretty soon, I toddle over to the piano and start picking out things. I'd hear my mom or brother playing. I'm not saying I was playing great or anything, but they were, you know, showing me stuff, and my mother started giving me some lessons about scales and how to, you know, get around the piano. And she showed me, I remember very clearly showing, okay, this is a boogie bass. And I couldn't quite reach everything, so she said, okay, you can do it this way. And it would be, I had an affinity, I think, for that instrument, the piano. And so my physical touching of it got me feeling like, okay, this is something, if I work really hard, maybe I can try to bring this out, or I can bring that out. And then that led to, you know, more playing in competitions, and people seemed to like what I was doing, so that inspired me a little bit more, and, you know, one thing led to another.
Well, how old were you when you're talking about the time that you had the record, and you'd put it on, and you listened?
I was three then, and then I was
three.
You know, already going. By four, I was, you know, going, I was trying to play, and then five, you know, I was a little better, and then, but a real turning point for me, an early turning point, was when I was 9 years old. I remember I'd won a competition, and then I was playing in Jackson, and I had worked very hard to be able to play a particular piece. It wasn't the technique of it that was the issue. I was trying to get the feeling, the emotion of it. It's really this deep, beautiful piece. And this is something that I knew when I was playing it. I knew that this piece had something inside it. And the issue was, for me, could I get it out? Could I get it out of the keyboard and my fingers and the box to play what I felt was in my heart and soul and already, wow, and what was already in this music? And so somehow, when I played the you had to play with all the other kids who done well, and so when we did the concert, I remember afterwards, adults coming up, and they had this look on their face, and they were saying to my parents, this is, so, you know, how moved they were, and this was unusual. And then I felt like, okay, so I did something. Something came through to those people. And that's what I felt at that moment, this is something, this is magic. And it's not just the muscles and fingers and all the, it's something else beyond. You have to do all that. You have to have the technique. You have to, physically put in so many hours, but there's something else. And if somehow I could meet that spiritual level, I could communicate, wow, something, and that this made, and there was no other way I could communicate all those things, and, you know, I couldn't say those things, but I could play them.
Exactly. We're talking to Bruce Levingston, just so talented, one of Mississippi's just gems. I mean that, a treasure. When you play Carnegie Hall all the times, all around the world, do you feel like you're a little different from everybody else because of your background?
You know, I think everybody's got some, particularly playing at a certain level, got some unique voice. And you can't hear a great performer that doesn't have that, the voice that is their own. And I feel like, for me, my background, which is different. I mean, it's a unique place where we grew up. I think it has had an impact on how I play and think about music, for sure. That makes it at least different. I don't say that it's better than, but it is, that background has definitely stamped itself on my sense of sound. I think, for instance, one thing that I will do, I can play lots of different kinds of music and whatever, but one thing that I am not afraid of is to play something slowly, to let the notes,
right,
speak out and speak for themselves, and let harmonies bleed one into another. And, you know, there's a kind of speed in today's life, and I can hear performers, you know, there's like a metronome going in the background. And for me, I think my background, the way we speak a little slower, the way the time that is, sense of time is a little different where we grew up.
Right.
And so that kind of affects even how I'm phrasing something. I might you know, my playing may have a drawl.
Right. Have that little southern drawl. I love, we're talking to Bruce Levingston. We are in a Mississippi Minute. We're going to be right back. Hey folks, in the market for new pillows, I'd like to tell you about who I believe strongly is the best pillow manufacturer made right here in the USA, my friends at Beds by Design and their amazing Omni Pillow. The Omni Pillow is made with a copper-infused fabric, and they use high-quality fabric. The copper has been known to be antifungal, antibacterial, and good for the skin. The OmniFlow is the foam in the inside. Designed by their veteran team, the OmniFlow is a one-of-a-kind product that is unlike any other material. It is a patent material that adjusts as the weight is applied. They combine that with responsive temperature control that regulates your body temperature as you sleep. OmniPillow has a 100-day return policy. And listen to this. They'll donate a pillow to someone in need every time you purchase one. Their goal? To give away 1 million pillows. It also comes with a stress cube that sells for 10 bucks. Give yourself a much-deserved life's rest. Go to OmniPillow.com. That's OmniPillow.com. Enter promo code Steve Azar and receive 20% off with free shipping. You won't regret it. Thanks, guys.
In a Mississippi Minute with Steve Azar, right here on Super Talk Mississippi.
I'm Steve Azar. We are with the fabulous Bruce Levingston. He is in Oxford right now, spends time in New York a lot, spends time all over the place. Bruce, I want you to take me, let's get past, I want to ask you about competitions first, because I didn't like in my world, it was like talent shows, and you and I both grew up playing in church. We both grew up playing everywhere we could play, but so competition-wise, what was that like?
You know, I think that when you're young, you have to do some of it because I think, in particular in classical music, that can propel you to learn certain repertoire that you may not be getting it ready for, because the composition may have a list of things, or you should learn this piece of Beethoven, this piece of Chopin, this piece of Mozart. And there's a level of it that can be healthy, but in the end, I think many the greatest artists have found that ultimately, while you know winning some prizes can be good, it is not what ultimately makes you an artist. I think you have to go beyond just winning something, and say you know playing Bach at its deepest level is not winning a gold star.
Right.
Because you can never be. Satisfied. There's always something else, like in reading, Shakespeare or Dostoevsky. There's always something beneath it. You go, oh, there's something else I didn't see, that I didn't realize was there. And so I think it's a step. It's the interesting thing is too. You often find great performers who sometimes the most important voices were not always winning first place, because if you play with an extremely strong personality, sometimes you know it really can turn some people off, but it can turn reach other people in the deepest way. And people are arriving at kind of somebody who is the least defensive, and that doesn't really make for a great voice.
Right.
So it's mixed emotions about those things. I think the important thing is, try to be as prepared as you can and learn as much as you can, but then ultimately you have to break out and do your own thing.
We're talking to Bruce Levingston. Bruce, I got a question. It may take me a second to get it out, so let me see if I can say this, because I think you brought up an interesting point. Just watching you play, and listening to your records, there's something sometimes when I feel like there's so much put into the simplest thing you do, and then you do that thing, and I'm like, how'd you do that? But there's so much there. You know what I mean? Like,
well, you and I say, I sent you a track of, I think, of Summerland, the great William Grant Still,
right.
Mississippi composer. He was born in 1895, and you wrote me back talking about the patience with the phrase, and the phrases are actually very simple. It's not as many notes as sometimes in certain parts of that piece as you would find in you know, late Beethoven or something like that, Chopin Etude, but it's so incredibly intense and expressive. It's in fact, as difficult or more. The same thing with the opening of a Bach fugue. It's just one hand, one finger at a time, playing one note. It can be the most exposed, difficult thing because there's nothing to hide behind.
Mm-hmm.
It's just
exactly.
You and your yeah. heart and soul, and that's it. And so it is very, very difficult. The saying that evidently Schnabel, great pianist, said Mozart is too easy for children and too difficult for adults.
Yeah. I love that. Hey, okay, so do you get frustrated at times? Like, do you throw your piano? You know what I mean? Like a tennis player throws his racket.
Yeah. There are days you feel, it's for instance, it's not necessarily just, again, hitting the notes. That I think, can be accomplished. But sometimes if I'm trying to just hit a note just so softly, and you can't get just the exact, it's this much too loud or this much too soft. And those nuances, those are things I remember that, I mean, it's happened for many pieces, but I might spend, 50 hours just playing over the course I'm preparing something, just two different notes, maybe the very first note and the very last note. Those are so important. You can spend years preparing a piece, but the opening or just how you close a piece mm-hmm. is the last thing that somebody hears. And so those moments of not getting exactly what the balance or tone, we say, I think you know this very well, you say no to yourself much more than yes.
Right.
I think if you're saying yes to yourself, something's wrong. I think
right.
it's almost always, no, that's not enough. No, it could be better. No, this is, and that's very hard to live with. I mean, you have to reject more of what you do than accept.
Right,
but this is what makes it. This is what drives you to do something. When it does work, when you do get that, special thing, it's magic.
Oh, I love it. We're talking to Bruce Levingston. He is magic. Bruce, your university, your college, your studies. You're getting out of, you're grown up. You're 18 years old, and you got to make your next move to continue your development as this child prodigy versus going to compete with, not compete. Forget that. That's over. Just getting in where you got to go to get better and to keep growing as an artist. Where did that happen?
So, in the music business, what you try to do, at least classical music, you try to go where the coaches are, just like with football or baseball, that mm-hmm. people are auditioning for the best coaches. So there were some great people in different parts of the country that I was thinking about. There'd been a great pianist who'd been at Oberlin and then went to Texas, and I'd followed him. Somebody had studied with the great pianist that I went to work with. Even in high school, I went off to Switzerland and off to a school in Georgia so I could be near these Hungarian pianists. And then this one of them knew another great pianist who's then at the University of Texas. So I went to audition for him, and the school took me and offered me some great things. It's still, it's a wonderful place in Austin, Texas. And so I was able to study not only with that pianist, but other people who were wonderful. They had built this great department. And then from there was another pianist I was trying to study with who was at the Royal Conservatory in Toronto. He took me, so I went up there, and then I played a concert, and John Steinway, who had the Steinway Company, heard me, and he said, really need to come to New York, and so we'll make you a Steinway artist. I said, well, I don't know, I have a Steinway. Well, we'll fix that. So that led to something else, and I ended up in New York and stayed with some more wonderful people. And I was...
Did the guy, you did know, he make you a Steinway, your own Steinway?
He made, no, but he, they made sure that I had a Steinway to play at all times.
Love
and
that.
So that was great, and I was very young, and even before I owned the Steinway, the name of Steinway Artists.
Don't you love the free stuff, Bruce? Don't you love it? Like, it's like, I'm looking at guitars, I just love it. Like toys.
You know, these, but there's a history, too, of all of these. That's such a great art to make instruments.
Right.
You know this very well from all the guitars. And it to be able to, you know, have one of the greatest instruments in the world to play, it also inspires you. And to think all of the great people who came before you who also played these instruments. So it's, you know, each bit would inspire me and push me a little bit more. And so anyway, that was a bit of it. And then when I think you remember these places where they were actually renting VCRs that I'd given. Friend was working when they asked if I had a tape, me playing, and that's when we had tapes. And I'd played at Aspen at the music festival, and I'd given them a tape. And somebody walked into the video store. They had it playing. Said, who is that? This is somebody who was at one of the big radio stations in New York. So they said, could we broadcast that? So they broadcast it, and that got a little bit more attention. But things like that that you just can't plan. That it's just part of the fortune and swirl of life that can happen. But I think you have to hopefully be... allow it to happen.
I love that we're talking to Bruce Levingston. Bruce, you get to play DJ right now, and this will be one of the times that we don't play your music during the set, because you know that we are the birthplace of American music. I love this part.
Yeah.
You get to choose between a couple artists. Would you like to hear, we'll keep it in the Delta, would you like to hear a little Charlie Pride or the North Mississippi All-Stars?
Whoa, this is just very tough, but I love them both.
I know that. Well,
you can't
have both. No. I can't do it. I always have to make.
Okay, what are my choices of the pieces?
Oh, you don't. We'll let my producer Will. Hello, Will. We'll let him figure out what he wants to play. But you just got to tell me the act.
play some Charlie Pride.
I love it. I love Charlie. We're with Bruce Levingston, incredible colorist, Arthur. Now we're going to get into pianist, and I want to talk about Carnegie Hall and what that feels like. Steve Azar. We're in a Mississippi Minute. Stand by.
As I think about my childhood and of my old hometown, I don't really miss them like before. It's nice to think about it, maybe even visit, but I wonder could I live there anymore.
In a Mississippi Minute with Steve Azar, right here on Super Talk Mississippi.
I'm Steve Azar. We are with our very own Bruce Levingston. And I appreciate you taking the all 60 minutes. You know, Mississippi Minute is actually 60 of them, but we just sort of don't tell everybody that because we like to take our sweet time, as my song says, and that's how we roll. Bruce, I want to know what it felt like the first time you stepped on the stage of Carnegie Hall. I remember my times at Madison Square Garden and the Forum and the Spectrum and Boston Garden and the Rose. I mean, those were moments. You know, the Opry for me, the Opry, or the even better yet, the church of it all, the Ryman Auditorium. What did it feel like when you walked out your first time?
You're thinking of all the great people who've come before you. It's Carnegie Hall. Tchaikovsky opened the hall, and Rachmaninoff played there, and Vladimir Horowitz played there, and Leonard Bernstein conducted there, Mahler conducted there. So it for me, but also, I mean, Liza Minnelli sang there, and Frank Sinatra, and Benny Goodman's concert at Carnegie Hall. All those people flood into your mind, and also you can see their photographs and their signatures, and so it's totally inspiring, and you just you know that hey, I want to give my best. People often say, or you're nervous, and it's not nervousness that one feels. It's the a kind of anticipation. Mm-hmm. Will I meet the moment? Will I do justice to this music? Do justice to this place? And it makes me, you know, try to be on my tiptoes. Let me be ready. Let me work as hard as I can be. So that's what I felt like, this rush, in a great way.
Right. I love it. I love that. That's the feeling. I got to understand, how many hours of practice did it take? How many a day did you do?
It's not just the hours that you're at the piano, but I would say, to answer that, it tends to be about 4 hours a day. Sometimes, if I'm getting ready for a big performance, it's six.
Yeah, that's a lot.
But to do four every day, no matter what, is also, because physically, you know, that's demanding. Piano is a demanding instrument. You have to sit there, and then for your back, for your legs. It's not just the hands; it's your whole body. And then also, you know, to build the mental concentration so you're crisp and really getting something out of it. If you're sleepy or you're not engaged, you're not going to. Your body and your memory won't absorb what you've done. It's as if you just hadn't practiced. So you've got to be. But there's something else. I mean, when I'm away from the instrument, that's also I'm learning, going through scores, looking at things, reading about the history of pieces, and all those things are also part of the practice. They're part mm-hmm. of the things that reinforce what makes the music stick for me and what gives me some kind of point of departure when I'm trying to interpret something. So if you play and you don't have any sense of the era or the time, I think you're kind of missing a piece of the puzzle. But to somehow, when I play Chopin, I know the paintings that he was surrounded by. I know the people he was talking to. I've read the letters. And it gives me a sense of what his personality was like. And so when I play something, yeah, I have a sense of this person. The composer's not sort of a marble bust to me. He's a real person, a human being. And same thing if you're playing Schubert or playing. And, you know, I think when we hear, like when I hear you sing, I can feel where you are in your life. Even when I go to different records of different times, you can really feel what somebody's like. It comes through.
There's no doubt. There's no doubt about that. I love that. We're talking to Bruce Levingston. Bruce, I want to jump a little bit because you're so involved, and I love that. I want to talk about the Workspace Solutions for New York, the performing arts communities. Let's start there.
I think of the art not just as music, but also, you know, painting and writing and sculpture. Right. And even as I walk out and see a building, I'm thinking of the way a corner of the building cuts into the sky. That's music for me. The rhythm of a building, the rhythm, you know, a staircase. Mm-hmm. And so, I think, you know, I read this book on Mrs. Hull, the great Mississippi painter. And I didn't realize when I started it, I knew her work as a little boy, but I didn't know anything about her life. She was a pianist, and she always described herself as a lyrical romantic. And I love that she picked a kind of musical term to describe herself, and in fact, what I was seeing when I was looking at her work was the music of the paint and the music of her style. Yeah, and so when I hear music, I hear in color. I very much think of harmonies as colors, and so it just translates into how I see. Why wouldn't, when I look at something like a great painting, it translates to me like music?
It does. So you're talking about this. So tell me about Brightfields, the mastery of Marie Hull. This is a new book, correct?
It came out. I think in 2015.
Oh, okay. And, okay.
It took a few years to write, and I had just a little boy, because Mrs. Hull, she's Mary Atkinson Hull, who lived in Belhaven, and she's from Summit, Mississippi, and she was born in 1890. And she clearly was a virtuoso painter. But in those days, you know, there were very few female artists that were, considered masters, or could that even have the potential in the minds of this sort of academy of male artists to go out and paint. But she knew she could do this. So she got a degree, actually, in music, and she taught. But then in order to get enough money, and then she went to New York and Philadelphia to the Academy of Art there, and then to Europe to study. And she studied with some of the greatest people in the world. And she came back to Jackson. She married a wonderful architect who also left great works throughout our state. And she went on to paint some of the most amazing works, that not only of scenes of Mississippi, but figures. Like she painted a sharecropper series in the 30s, really moving and powerful, of people, black and white. She didn't paint them, in the fields, but she painted them as portraits, as mm-hmm. human beings. And you saw the way she depicted their faces, the hardness, but also the humanity of their lives. Wow. And so she treated everybody equally, and this is a remarkable thing. So she had painted a man born into slavery, born in 1847. She painted him in the 30s, and she gave the painting its full name, which was John Wesley Washington, but she titled it An American Citizen.
Wow.
This is a remarkable, a quiet but powerful statement. This is somebody who is a citizen now, and he's not been born a citizen. You know, so she was, I think, an important voice, good friend of Eudora Welty's, even taught Eudora Welty painting. So it's part of our fantastic, rich culture here. And the painting itself, her work, really is remarkable. And if you didn't know anything about her, or didn't know her background or what all these things, you would still stand back and, my goodness, this is an important American artist. And many people since, I think the book has come out, have seen that, and she's now in many museums around the country.
All right, we got to talk about civil rights, because I know you've touched on that now. You got to talk about your performances, conducting master classes now in all these public schools.
I feel that education is so important for everyone, that I've played in many schools around the country, but I try as often as possible to play for young people here in our state. And, I meet them and talk to them, and I find that they're so smart and so talented, and just like everybody, when they're just waiting for opportunity. And so those of us who are lucky enough to, have careers and be able to do something, I think it's part of our responsibility to reach out and try to guide people, inspire them, and help them as much as we can. And sometimes it's not that they're hearing, they go, oh, I want to go be a pianist or I want to be a musician. It's not that. It's just they can say, oh, that guy, he wanted to do that, and he went and did it. I remember I was playing in Charleston. A young lady came up to me. This is where Morgan Freeman was from, and he had requested I was playing something in the public schools there, so I played for, I think, 1,300 kids. And this young lady came up. She was in eighth grade. She was African American. So a lot of kids had come up to say they wanted to be musicians, this, that. She came up and said, what do you want to do? Do you play the piano? She said, no. I said, well, what do you want? She said, I'm going to be a lawyer. And she said this with such a sense of confidence. It was just totally inspiring. And
yeah.
That she knew that she could do this, and she no doubt will. And that's the kind of confidence you want to instill in people.
Right. Like,
I can go do this. And I think you and I grew up with, families that said, you can go do that.
Talking to Bruce Levingston. We are in a Mississippi Minute. We're going to be right back.
In a Mississippi Minute with Steve Azar, right here on Super Talk Mississippi.
I'm Steve Azar. We are with the fabulous Bruce Levingston. The thrill of watching a kid want to succeed and want to get better and listen to advice. And they're always teaching you. You know, I'm always an open book to learn because I'm constantly hoping I am learning. You can learn from youth as much as they can learn from us. And it's just so exciting when you do the artist in resident thing. Now, you're doing the artist in resident thing at Ole Miss now, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm the chancellor's artist in residence at the Honors College, and then they were kind enough to give me an endowed chair.
That's so cool.
It's kind of two roles, and that's been great to have. And I teach a class in the Honors College on art in the Republic, which is essentially about how art is inspired by things that happen in society, but also then in turn, art can inspire. It's one of the great things about music. It can rise above politics, above partisanship, and just reach and speak to people. And so we discuss ways that these kinds of things happen, not just with music, but other forms of art. And I think that can inspire the kids. One of the things I try to teach is that it doesn't matter your point of view. If you can argue your point of view with respect and kindness,
So important right now what you're saying right now.
Yes, and also hear another point of view with respect and kindness. It goes both ways, and
right.
That it's so important. So in art, there's always a different interpretation. There's no single interpretation. And so we talk about those pieces, maybe a painting or a piece of music, everybody's got a different opinion. But what I try to emphasize is really... Can you express your opinion or hear somebody else's with an open ear and an open mind? And it doesn't mean you necessarily have to change your opinion or mind. You might, but even if you don't, by showing openness to somebody else, it allows for their spirit to have room to breathe, to feel that they have validity. Mm-hmm. And it's remarkable what you see over the course of a semester. I watch the students grow and learn how to talk to one another. They're already wonderful kids and to start with, so this is, one's blessed with that. But
right.
I think this spirit that we share as performers and artists, that we're always, we don't think in terms of when we hear another musician, or what color is their skin, or where are they from. You're really just listening to the core of their soul. You know, if we could listen to the core of people's souls as we talk to each other about all these things going on, even now in our society, I think this would allow us, to hopefully find common ground and just be civil and kind to one another.
Right.
I think it's just such a privilege to be able to live in this world that we do of creativity. And it's so great also to live doing something that's positive. Life is difficult for everybody. But if we can reach out and find the positive things and doing something that makes people happy, that is beautiful, like making music, it's a privilege. And so every day I wake up and I'm inspired to do it.
I love it. So what do we work? When's their next record coming out?
So January, I think, 26th, I have a new album coming out. I've just made Call Citizen with some pieces strongly connected to Mississippi. I'm very excited about the beautiful Summerland by William Grant Still is on there. And I just played that at Carnegie Hall this spring. Piece by Price Walden, a young composer from Mississippi. I also premiered his piece that I commissioned in honor of the opening of the new Civil Rights Museum and Museum of Mississippi History.
Fantastic.
that was just opened, which if anyone has not seen it, you should go to Jackson and see it. These museums are so beautiful and inspiring and beautifully done, and I'm just so proud they're here in our state. But anyway, I commissioned Price to write these pieces, and he's just one of the, I've played composers around the world. He's a great composer already, and he's in his mid-20s. And so I gave it its premiere, and now it's going to be on the new CD, so I'm very excited about that.
Oh, I love it. And so January 20 what, do you say? You got the release date?
It'll be January 26th, I'm actually going to be in London playing that night at the Royal Opera House And one of the pieces on the album is going to be on that concert. So just an exciting time coming up in 2019.
Oh, I love it. Well, listen, hey, buddy, I can't thank you enough for taking the time. I love having people that I get to know a little, you know, that I've gotten to know, that I've grown up with, people like my dad's, you know, whatever. And on this show, I get to know everybody so much better, and I've gotten the same thrill. And
thank you, Steve. You're such a great artist, and so generous to share your work with Mississippi and the nation. Inspired by you, and thank you for having me on.
We've been with the great Bruce Levingston, and we're gonna send it off. And you guys have a great weekend. We've been in a Mississippi Minute. I'm Steve Azar.
I'm Steve Azar. In a Mississippi Minute, all 60 of them, where you can take your sweet time.
Hey, I'm Billy Kinder, host of Big Billy Kinder Outdoors. You can hear the show Saturday afternoons 1 until 3, right here on Super Talk Mississippi. Gary Klein and Kelly Jordan are our pros from the Bassmaster Elite Series. Mr. Whitetail Larry Wysoon takes care of all of our big game needs. Plus, Tom Dockin and Ronnie Smith will help you build a better bird dog. Not to mention the fact that we just have a whole heck of a lot of fun with a lot of great guests. I hope you'll be a regular. Hey, we'll see you in the camp house this Saturday at 1 on Super Talk Mississippi.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.